Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
That was a dynamite cut. What was it? Never mind. Shoot, where's the. Hold on.
Way to be prepared, David.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 16, Crunch Time. And now, here are your hosts, Tara C. Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting. Everybody gets the middle initials.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara C. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm all right.
Let's do some site business right up top before we get into it. Because it is summer and people are traveling and doing things, this podcast is going to be going down to a once a week format for probably the next, like this episode and the next four, I think, if I'm looking at the calendar right, because I'm traveling and then Sarah's got people in and then Sarah's taking off the week of her anniversary and blah, blah, blah.
And I'm a very busy businessman.
And Dave's got showers to not take. I don't know.
I got Overwatch to play, guys.
He's got a lot of Overwatch to play. So we'll let you know when we're back to our two a week normal schedule. But just for now, it's only on Mondays for the next several weeks.
And a production note, we are recording 3 episodes today.
We are.
So
one more than our usual 2.
Yeah. So I expect a punchier output than usual. So it'll be interesting to see as you listen to this over the next
few
weeks.
Episode 18 is going to be something.
As a reminder, you can buy shirts to support this podcast at glarkware.com, or you can buy an ad, $100 business, $50 personal. Go to previously.tv/ads. And now on with episode 16.
Okay, Sarah, let's start with our D story, Deshaun versus gravity. And we should, if that headline is not too triggering for you, we're also recording this the day after Sarah has suffered an injury herself. So she's playing hurt, just like Deshaun.
What happened?
Oh, I just yard sailed. Whatever.
Yard sailed.
She fell down.
Okay. Fell down.
She fell down on a sidewalk.
Took the biggest of big diggers. Yeah, it was
big diggers.
It was awesome. I'm going to go and leave a single white rose on this patch of sidewalk because it's gotten me before.
A great project would be the Sarah D. Bunting lexicon. Big digger, boot, all these things that I enjoy. E to B.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't believe you've never heard her say yard sale before.
No. That's a good one.
Which I never heard. And then in college, someone was crossing the quad and the bottom fell out of a paper bag she was carrying in the rain, like literally rolling cans, celery. And some asshole opened a window and screamed, yard sale, and then slammed it closed. I felt so bad for this girl. No, the girl was not me. It actually was the 30. But ever since then, yard sale.
No. Well, enough about your yard sale. Let's go on to Deshaun's. Spoiler alert. Brandon has his first session with Deshaun since Christmas because somehow after his big threat to Professor Randall, his reaction was not to get someone else to tutor Deshaun. Okay. I mean, I'm not mad if it means more Deshaun. I am mad that Brandon is a fucking prick in clip number 2.
Figuring out how many points you're going to score against USF?
Hey, man. Come on in. Been expecting.
You have? You could have fooled me. The TV's not on. What's the matter? Cable out?
There you go, being your harsh self. I'm ready to be tutored, man.
You're not kidding.
I need something to take my mind off the San Francisco game. I'm starting Thursday. You know what I'm saying?
Well, if you're going to get this nervous about every game, you could probably graduate in 2 years.
I'm not fooling. I'm taking the final tomorrow, too. Man, I'm down with Soch.
You're down with Soch?
You heard me. Back home in my hood, I witnessed a sociological system firsthand and could identify its different strata.
You read chapter 5, I'm impressed.
And chapter 6, interdependent organizations? That's nothing but a basketball team.
Was it something I said turned you around?
Nah, man. Something Natasha said.
Natasha, is that the girlfriend?
No.
The twin sister. Ah. She made me study the whole damn holiday. She said she whipped my lazy butt if I didn't start getting more out of college. She works for minimum wage at a tire plant, you understand?
Yeah, I do. I got a twin sister myself.
Ah, then you know what I'm talking about.
Fuck off. He's such a dick. Like,
did we ever meet Natasha?
I don't think so.
Because I feel like Natasha would have destroyed DeBrandon. And I'm a little sad that it didn't end up being actually like Vivica A. Fox again.
Yeah.
Being like, I'm back, beaches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, shut up, Brandon.
Is that de girlfriend? Fuck off. How about that? Like, he's such a dick through this whole conversation when Deshaun is like trying to be conciliatory and change the terms of their relationship. But of course, Brandon can't stop being a smug asshole for 1 second. Anyway.
And Deshaun, get a deadbolt.
Yes, seriously.
Use it. Yeah. I'm buying. Chain. Anything.
Failing that, at least get a cat door and make Brandon come in that way to shame him appropriately. Anyway.
Which he can walk through while standing at his full height.
Yeah, his hair might brush the top of it, but anyway. At the final, Brandon looks around and notices that Deshaun hasn't shown up. So afterwards, he waits for Randall and they both act like their last exchange before Christmas never happened in clip number 3.
Look, I got to apologize to you. I don't know what happened to Deshaun. We really spent a lot of time studying, and he promised me he'd be here.
Well, it's no problem. He's up in the Bay Area.
Why? The game isn't until tomorrow.
Yeah, but the public relations director was besieged with calls, so he went up there early to do some national interviews, you know, CNN, ESPN. In fact, if we're lucky, he might mention us.
And the fact that he's missing finals?
No, he's not missing anything. I gave him the finals to take home.
Oh, what are you going to give him this time? An A+?
Brandon, try to understand that a successful athletic program helps to pay for the education you're receiving.
And the education he's not receiving? Is every one of his teachers as athlete-friendly as you?
Brandon.
What if his talent isn't enough? What if he can't make it in the pros? Then what has he got? I'll tell you what he's got. He's got a minimum wage job in some Texas tire plant because he never got an education.
Look, Brandon, if you decide you want to take more classes in sociology, I suggest you look for another professor.
Well, at least we finally agree on something.
Poor Ariano, daughter of a registrar, please inform the listeners whether this is how classes work.
No, it's not. at no, all. It's not. I mean, everything about the we're about to find out in the next episode that these fuckers are getting like their third week off of the school year, and it's like February. So I don't understand how the school works at all. It seems to be not so much California University as Narnia University in terms of realism, but yeah, I don't. And also like just how Brandon shifts from like friendly tone to back to his dickhead tone. Like, I don't understand who wrote the scene. It's all over the place and makes no dramatic sense.
And for everyone who thinks that we're being too hard on Brandon, which actually, as far as I can tell, is exactly zero people who listen to this podcast, but just in case someone is extremely new to, you know, life, Brandon makes all these perfectly legit points mm-hmm. about problems in college athletics, but then this is what makes this speech so quintessentially Brandon. First of all, the tone he is taking with a grown-up, mm-hmm. no. And second of all, you just learned that fact, and now you're repurposing the single thing mm-hmm. you think you know about a person of color's experience in this system to scream at somebody who is your intellectual and experiential superior.
Yep. Yeah, he's terrible. Like, how he doesn't get punched in every episode.
I am now speechless.
No,
it's
I know.
Happened.
It's shocking. It, I mean, the real shock is that we're still shocked, but like that he just never learns, and the show never makes him learn, which is the most annoying part.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't.
Anyway, he's not the one that's going to have to learn a terrible lesson in this episode, unfortunately, as when we next see him, he's studying and listening to the basketball game on the radio. So he hears everything when Deshaun falls and badly injures himself. And so when we see him after that, he comes to visit Deshaun in his dorm room where he's laid up in bed with, frankly, not enough pillows for my taste. You can see the picture in the visual aids. Deshaun gives one of his glorious stink faces at Brandon, but like, gotta brother some pillows. Jesus. Like,
well, yeah, he there's hurt like himself. One. It's like the one that they issued with the dorm room that no one uses because typhoid bed bugs. Like, dude, he was the starter.
Yeah.
Maybe, little buckwheat for our friend.
He should at least have
buckwheat
like a CU.
Pillow. That was not a reference to anything. No, else.
I knew what
buckwheat
you meant.
Pillow. Yes. I am not Brandon.
No. He should at least have like a CU throw pillow from the bookstore, because we're about to find out two episodes from now that the bookstore is full of all kinds of stupid CU branded tat. But anyway, Deshaun is full of self-recrimination about causing his own injury. Brandon is full of odious heartiness and buck up little camperism, trying to get Deshaun to use a setback to focus on his studies. Deshaun insists that he took the exam himself, but doesn't think he did well. But Brandon says he thinks he did because he fucking saw Deshaun's exam before Deshaun did when Randall gave it to Brandon to deliver, which all happened off screen, by the way. So we don't see how, like, okay, that relationship is better again. Make up your mind about what is going on between Randall and Brandon. It makes no sense. Also, it's not appropriate for Brandon to look at his grade before Deshaun does. But anyway, Deshaun got a C and is happy, although he's worried that he'll lose his perks if he can't play, including his tutor. And Brandon and his smug chest hair, which you could also see in the visual aids, are such a good guy collectively that he would never abandon Deshaun that way, which whatever for Deshaun's academics, but I'm glad it means Deshaun will be around some more. And it does. So let's move on.
But what a price to pay.
God, no kidding.
What a price to pay.
Let's move on to our C story. Sanders versus Sears. So Sanders comes back from Christmas busy with keg activities, but concerned that some of the brothers think he got the charges against him dropped by narking on them. And primarily the one fomenting anti-Sanders sentiment is, no duh, John Sears. Steve's as yet unseen former keg president dad has already advised Steve not to make waves about this. But at the intramural volleyball game, we get more characterization for Steve's fellow pledge months, such as he's fat and he loves snacks. Steve makes a connection with him by giving him his moon pie. There's an actual moon pie in this. Anyway, Steve is miserable because John, the captain, won't play him. And when Steve protests, John Sears puts in months, the fat guy. As conflict goes, these stakes are not the highest, in my opinion. However, Steve is so upset about it that he's decided to tell Mike Ryan about the baseball setup after all. So then we get a scene where Mike Ryan calls John Sears and Keith in to meet with him and Steve, as we hear in clip number 4.
I should have known. What's the matter? Was Sanders complaining about playing time?
Yeah, like every other freshman.
Guys, relax. I think Steve has bigger fish to fry.
Wells. I got whales to fry.
Okay, dude. Steve.
What?
Thinking he has the moral high ground is never good. Anyway, Mike repeats Steve's accusations with John Sears denies, as does Keith. Steve believes that Keith had nothing to do with it, but not Sears. And Sears does not like being accused in clip number 5.
Check this out. I won't even answer a question. He's guilty.
I'm not guilty. I'm peeved.
Worst
I'm so
outburst.
Peeved, I ripped 17 pages off my Word a Day calendar, and I'm going to read you every one with my pointy teeth.
Peeved. It's the most ridiculous outburst on this show since you crud. Like, I understand you can't say fuck off, but
I forgot
still.
You crud.
I'm peeved. Anyway, as things escalate, the two pounce on each other.
Screw yourself. Oh, 90s.
This is what happens when you find a stranger in the Alps, Steve Sanders. As things escalate, the two pounce on each other and have to be pulled apart. But this isn't over, as we hear in clip number 6.
I'm claiming my right to bring this to the test.
Me too.
You idiot. You don't even know what the test is.
As long as it's me against you.
Oh, you got that right. Because when this goes before the brothers, the good news is you're out of this fraternity, pal.
We'll see.
You're right. We'll see.
That music.
And then we'll
clip.
See some more, and then we'll keep seeing.
Just
and then there'll
on.
Be some amazing cutaway shots to this unbelievably, like, his neck is actually a pencil, this it individual is. Watching this all unfold.
Yes, he's like the skinnier son of James Urbaniak somehow in this episode. Anyway, we'll get to it. After dinner at the beach, Steve exposits about the test to Kelly in clip number 7.
Well, it's a variation on the black ball ceremony. It's me against Sears, and one of us has to be voted out.
And you're afraid it's going to be you.
How can I compete with this guy? He's a big man in the house.
He's a toad.
Yeah, but he has a lot of friends, and everyone else would be too afraid to vote against him out in the open.
Don't you have at least one person that will stand up for you?
Well, yeah, but the fact remains that this time tomorrow, I'll be an independent.
I'm sorry.
I just hope it's not unanimous. I would like to walk out of there with my head up.
Well, maybe it's for the best.
Hey, maybe I can move into Silver's room. If you'd have me.
Well, I've already had you.
Oh.
What?
Never change, Sanders. We know you won't.
I don't know. Anyway, God, stupid. So then we have to watch the fucking test. As Sarah says, the scene takes an age, and it's so stupid. Right before, John Sears tells Keith in a very offhand way that he totally did set up Steve as revenge for poisoning Kelly against him and stopping him from raping Rayanne at Thanksgiving. So, very different episode.
Thanks for also not raping Roseanne. That would have been weird.
Yeah.
Really weird.
So, when it looks like things are going against Steve, suddenly Keith votes against John Sears and announces why, and then the tide turns, and also Muntz is pro-Steve because Steve gave him that moon pie, and as we know, Muntz is fat. There's plenty of pictures and GIFs from this ridiculous scene in the visual aids. I recommend that you just look at them and don't watch it because you have better things to do with 7 hours of your life. Moving on to our B story, McKay versus Steele. So,
oh, God.
I know. We have to do it, though. Dylan apparently told Kelly all about Suzanne and Erica off screen, during which time she evidently formed a negative opinion of them because now she's mildly snitty on the phone as Dylan enthuses about being on Team Steele in clip number 8.
Yeah, having a family around is like being at the carnival every day.
No.
Please note in the background of that clip, the bar of when the Saints come marching in on the Casio, which we hear in every possible iteration, and it's like this bonding activity between Dylan and Erica. And as you watch this, you should actually do it on mute so that you don't, you know, vomit yourself to death.
Or book a plane ticket to New Orleans to burn it down because you're so furious,
yes,
with the song forever,
like,
after.
In sympathy and solidarity. And, you know, lighting a Saints calendar to do so. Like, just keep in mind as you're watching this entire subplot, Erica is supposed to be 12.
Yeah.
Not 5, mm-mm, not 7, 12 years old. Okay. Continue.
One other thing about this keyboard, Dylan tells Kelly that he borrowed it, which, first of all, from who? I guess Jim. But second of all, you're rich. Like, just buy a fucking keyboard. They're not expensive. Anyway, we also learned that Suzanne is looking at job listings so that she can quit spending off Dylan, I'm sure. Then Dylan comes by to see Jim. Brenda still sucks at their poetry class, so Dylan invites her over to study. And there's a bonus in clip number 9.
You can spend some time with Suzanne and Erica. I gotta tell you, Bren, she is the cutest kid.
Get out of this, Brenda. Just fail your class. It's not that important.
Ew. Yeah. I look, no, like, don't phrase that as a bonus. Like, you know, my family's here. Ellipsis.
Mm-hmm.
She's the cutest kid.
Mm-mm.
He says, pitching something about a sibling.
Pass.
Why, TV? Why are you always going to make it so fucking creepy with older brothers? Why?
Yeah. Also, I don't know why that's an inducement. Like, I don't, it's okay. I'll take your word for it that they're great. We don't need to hang out. But anyway, Brenda, whatever's that, it must be incredible to have a family. And Dylan says he hopes that Jim sees it that way. Smash cut to clip number 10.
You want to do what?
I want to give him 10 grand, just enough to help him get back on their feet.
You know, Dylan, I warned you about this from the very beginning. All sorts of scam artists coming out of the woodwork laying claim to your inheritance.
Nobody is laying claim to anything, Jim. I'm the one who's offering.
How do you know they are who they say they are? Has she shown you any proof?
No.
Pictures, anything?
No, Jim. But look, you didn't trust my father to begin with. And he turned out an awful lot different than you thought. It's my money.
I know. And I know how much it means to you to have a sense of family, but Dylan, you gotta be careful.
It's 10 grand, Jim.
All right. How about give him 5,000 for a start with one condition?
What?
She gives you her social security number.
For, like, a tax write-off?
No, so I can do a background check.
What am I supposed to say to her? Look, here's some money to help you, but I don't really trust you.
Blame it on your cynical business manager. If she's legit, she won't have any problems with it.
I mean, I kind of feel like this is the prenup all over again. Like, this is not an unreasonable thing to ask of someone if they are not, in fact, a grifter. So Jim is right.
Yeah. And here's the other thing, Dylan. If 10 grand is so trifling, buy your bratty sister a keyboard and a helmet. Actually, with all that hair, she probably doesn't need the helmet.
Nope.
And when you go to the peach pit on Christmas, pay for your food.
Yeah.
And don't have the... And he doesn't even box it up himself. He asked Nat to do it.
Right. Yeah, give Nat $10,000 to pay for homeless people's meals while you're at it.
And all of Steve's sad mega burgers from when he was adopted and suspended.
Ugh. So then we have to watch as Dylan makes both of his ex-girlfriends sink Camptown races with Erica's playing like a real dick. It's so cruel. Susan comes home having had no luck finding job as a paste-up artist, so that in case you forgot, it's the 90s. And she's about to resort to go back to waitressing, so I think we all know where this is going. Then Dylan asks her to go and talk outside, and she's thrilled when he hands her the check for $5,000. He thought this would help her get her own place. In the early 90s in LA, it certainly will. That's probably a year's rent of a decent two-bedroom. But anyway, she pretends to feel funny about taking his money, but he wants her to have it, and she accepts it on the condition that he regard it as a loan. But then, clip 11.
Suzanne, there's one more thing, and I really hope that you don't have a problem with it. I've got to get your social security number.
My social security number?
My business manager. He runs a background check on everyone that I deal with.
Oh, I see.
I told him that he was being overprotective, you know, but he says he's looking out for my best interest.
And obviously you agree with him.
I didn't say that.
But it is what you meant. You want my social security number? Fine. And while you're at it, why don't you take my fingerprints, too? Call America's Most Wanted. You are just like your father. Take your damn check. I am not for sale.
Suzanne, hey, I didn't mean it like that.
What is this music from? Like, is this about a PSA about how to react when you find out your friend has diabetes or something? Like, I don't get it.
I think it's from the movieization of whatever that that kid's book was where her friend got stung by a bee and died. Not My Girl. This was an actual book.
I don't know. Anyway, it makes no sense. I would love to know what it replaced.
I hope everyone in the storyline gets stung by a bee and dies, but credit to Suzanne Steele.
Yeah.
First of all, nice naming, and second of all, I love that the writers basically can't do anything else right, but they play the way a con would play this flawlessly.
Perfectly. Through this whole episode, in fact, like they really drop a lot of breadcrumbs for stuff that's going to pay off later in a way that's like surprisingly subtle for this show. Anywho, so Dylan then comes home later to an empty house, a house without Casio music, he thinks, until Suzanne and Erica come out from wherever they were lurking. Suzanne wants to apologize. He thinks that he should be doing that, but she says she overreacted. She just doesn't like being dependent on him, she says. They agree to put it behind them. He still has the check in his pocket and gives it to her, I guess with no conditions. They're going back to Iowa so that she can deal with her shit and then come back. Then Erica asks to stay with Dylan, which if she were part of this grift would be a solid move. But Suzanne immediately says it's too much of an imposition and not, for example, that it's not appropriate for a pubescent child to stay with a 19-year-old man she just met. But whatever. Dylan then says he has one more final and then he has a fucking week off, which I've already addressed, but how fucking many weeks do these punks get? I got like two. He offers to take Erica to Magic Mountain. She freaks out, so I guess that's that. And then after dropping Suzanne off at the airport to go back to Iowa, Erica describes how neurotic Suzanne was when they were on the bus out to L.A., thinking every time they changed that they were going to get on the wrong bus. And then, ominously, clip number 12.
Oh, she'll find somebody to help her. She always does, you know.
Uh-huh.
Tell me more.
But, of course, Dylan does not
Dylan,
pick up on
totally
this.
Incurious.
Mm-hmm. And then, creepily, clip 13.
Do you think my mother's pretty?
Of course I do. You know that.
Do you think I'm going to be as pretty as she is?
Sweetheart, you are going to be a knockout.
Dylan, I really want you to like us.
Well, I do like you. I mean, I like you an awful lot. If I didn't like you, I wouldn't hit you with this pillow all the time, would I? What are you talking about?
When you and Mom got in that fight, it really scared me.
Listen, we're family now. You and me. And there are always going to be some bumps along the way.
I hope you won't get angry at me when I tell you what I did.
I'm not gonna like this very much, am I?
I went into my mom's purse when she wasn't looking. I got something for you.
What?
Her social security card. I only did it because I knew you wanted it. Are you mad at me?
12. 12 years old. 12.
It really scared me when you had that fight. You've known him for a week. Like, all of this posturing about, we're a family now. Like, you're not. You're still basically strangers getting to know each other. Like, don't jump in with both feet. Both of you should be more cautious about this. I mean, not Suzanne, because she's running a long game. But the other two should, in my opinion.
Well, and either you're in on it, in which case, stop acting like... the bus ran over your head on the way to Los Angeles.
Yep.
Or you're not, in which case, also stop acting like that because you're supposed to be 12. Like,
yeah.
I don't. If this show were set in the 1890s, it would be one thing if a 12-year-old were this out of it and was like, look at this rag dolly I wove for you out of my own hair. But she's just so dim.
Yeah,
and babyish, and I can't with that.
Well, speaking of I can't, let's move on to our A story. David versus sobriety. At the beach, everyone is garbage in clip number 14.
How could he break up with me on Christmas? And all because I wouldn't sleep with him.
Donna, stop tearing yourself up. You've made your decision. Now don't be ashamed to live with it.
Has anybody seen my cliff notes?
On the couch. So how you doing?
Why couldn't Shakespeare write in normal English like everyone else?
I meant about us.
Look, I told you already. After finals, we'll figure it out, all right? We both got enough to worry about right now.
David, if you have a problem, that's my problem too.
I've got 4 finals, 2 term papers, and a radio show every night. Which one of my problems do you want to start with?
Well, is there anything I can do?
Yeah, you can stay out of my way.
Oh, God. This is also the scene where we see David debuting his new emo look, which is...
Oh, Jesus.
The black Kangol hat on backwards. In fact, it's not even a Kangol. It's just a hat. Because Kangol wasn't a thing yet, and he was not cool enough to have it, if it was. A series of giant, like, plaid button-downs with hoods built in, and giant black pants, just all black, all sad, all David, and it's so...
And silver pinky ring.
And,
don't forget the silver pinky ring.
And giant earring, of course. He's the worst. And I have to say also, Donna, maybe he broke up with you because you whine all the time. Like, stop whining.
Yeah, like, he broke up with you. Stop being a Klingon.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
And I don't know why it's like, we'll figure it out after finals. Like, no, you broke up. Like, be broken up. I know you live together and it's weird, but that was your stupid decision to make and not part of this. But anyway... and Donna's ingratiating face is one of her most punchable also, by the way. And I'm also putting the Andrea Jesse shit here in this storyline because who cares? And say Gabrielle Carteris is starting a show for real. And you can see in the visual aids, she's actually already got the pregnant lady waddle going as we see her coming down some stairs. Like, I made a gif.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, knees out. It was like, oh,
yep. Anyway, she tells that Brenda that she and Jesse swore off contact during finals. Who cares? Then Andrea comes back to the dorm and sees that Dan has moved out. Oh, and she has a new RA named Kathy. You can also see her in the visual aids, but she looks exactly like, you know, the scene in Ferris Bueller's Day Off when Rooney thinks that he's found Ferris at the arcade and then the person turns around yes. and it's a girl. That's looks exactly like Kathy. She comes up later. Who cares again? Back to the mopers at the radio station. David is trying to weasel out of his commitments in clip 15.
The best of the David Silver show.
That's an oxymoron, isn't it? Like jumbo shrimp or wireless cable or something.
Come on, Howard. Why can't we just rebroadcast one of my old shows just so I can get through finals?
Silver, we go live 24 hours a day. It's a bear, but we love it.
It's just kind of a rough time right now. I just broke up with Donna.
Oh, man. That is tough.
I hurt her pretty badly, but I know it was for the best.
Then let her buck. Cut loose. Don't mope. Do the show.
I'm not looking to mope. I'm looking to study. I've got finals and classes I've hardly been in.
All right, I hear you. Close the door. Crystal meth. Drug of choice for long-distance truckers and DJs who want to take their finals. This'll do the trick.
I don't know, man. What does it do?
Everything. Do a hit right now, you study, you go through your work like a chainsaw through butter. And you do a little bit right before your 2 a.m. shift, you'd be in cruise control till morning. Get the OG out of my fridge.
I hope you like this drone that's going on under the scene, by the way, because it's the official drug theme of David Silver, and you're going to be hearing it so much. Da-na-na. Anyway.
Also, okay, whatever. Like, I assume our listeners will inform me in the comments at previously.tv if I am incorrect about this. I have no experience with crystal meth or any meth.
Quit bragging, Sarah.
I'm pretty sure you don't put it in orange juice.
No, I remember someone telling me at some point, and I think it was Jessica Morgan, that of Go Fuck Yourself, that there was a story at some point that the writers said they didn't want to portray how meth is actually used for impressionable kids. So they came up with this, like, you dissolve this powder in orange juice workaround.
I heard you could smoke raisins.
Yeah, I'm serious that I seem to recall that this is the case. And I'm sure our resident 90210 historian, Andy Smith, on the forums will tell us if I'm remembering this right. But I think that's the reason. We also later
either
see
that
him,
or
like,
some big orange juice concern turned down a product placement pitch. And they were like, fine.
Yeah, it's always orange juice, too. Like, no one is ever like, can I put it in Coke? Can I put it in apple juice? What if I add it to my Palm Wonderful? Like, none of that is ever coming.
Yeah, big cranberry dodged a bullet with that storyline, for sure.
Anyway, we also later see him, like, lick it. We see him dump it out on the table like he's going to snort it. Like, all no one has any idea how meth is used. And obviously, this was many years before Breaking Bad, but it's still hilarious in retrospect. Moving on. After commercials, David is every drug cliche, talking way too fast about a bunch of bullshit and actually straightening up the apartment for the first time in his life. Sarah made a gorgeous gif of him, like, his Twyla Tharp choreography on drugs.
It was like he's having this munch conspiracy moment while Twilighting around in his XXXXXL outfit, as Danny Dryden used to put it. He's so street. Yeah.
Anyway, he's so hyperverbal that he actually willingly talks to Donna, who is confused by his change of mood. She wants to talk about what they are to each other now. He doesn't. He wants OJ. Kelly then wanders in and Donna dopily tells her that she thinks things between her and David are going to work out. Spoiler, they are not. later, Kelly in her very cute outfit, which you can see in the visual aids, nice ballet neck top, cute flippy little skirt, find David crashed out on the couch about to miss a final, and she wakes him up in clip 16.
What's wrong?
Nothing is wrong.
Well, if it's any consolation, I'm not feeling so hot myself. Jackie corralled me into having dinner with her, and I'm sure I'm gonna have to sit there and listen to her rave on about how the judge has it in for her.
Oh, that sounds rough.
Hey, knock it off. You might be able to pull that attitude with Donna, but you're not gonna pull it with me.
Listen, I'm sorry, okay? All I'm saying is if you don't want to go, don't go. What are you getting on my back for?
I love that she calls him out for being a bitch on the grounds of, like, I don't care if you mistreat Donna, but I'm not going to stand for it because that feels very true to life.
Yeah, exactly.
He also gets a spectacular eye roll in the scene as she's going on about Jackie and the custody fight because none of us care and he speaks for us all for once.
True.
So then we have no idea whether David actually made it to this exam, because when we next see him, he's kissing up to Howard in the hopes of getting more drugs. Howard is over it, which you can also see in the visual aids. For some reason, however, he hands more drugs over, warning David that he's going to have to pay next time. Hey, make him pay now. Maybe that would be a deterrent. just saying. I don't want to tell anyone how to run their drug business, but... And then David, as I said before, dumps it out on the table, which you can see in the visual aids, because no one understands how this drug works. Then David's alarm goes off the next day at 11:30 a.m., and he's just reached into his pocket for his dear friend meth, because apparently he didn't smoke or lick or snort all of it, when Donna lets herself in, and he hides it incredibly obviously, which you can see in the visual aids. She's also, it should be noted, also in the visual aids, that she's wearing a cute outfit for once. Jeans that are the appropriate size and like this stripy top that's sort of like, I don't know if it's just that it's pulled down on one side, but it seems like the stripes sort of go down. It's very cute. Anyway, she tries to make a connection, not realizing that she's caught him coming down. She's like, let's take a nap together. Like, what? He just woke up, as you know. But anyway, so we hear how that goes in clip 17.
Well, I heard your show last night, and I thought the bit about seeing the children in the playground being chased by the Grim Reaper, I thought it was really funny.
Well, it wasn't meant to be funny.
Well, I meant, I thought it said a lot about the human condition, but it was also a good laugh.
Thanks. I'll see you later.
You know, it was getting so late, I was beginning to wonder if you were going to miss the whole day.
Take a hint.
Not that it's a... bad day to sleep in, if you know what I mean. Actually, I'm pretty tired myself.
Donna, get off the bed.
What?
Off the bed.
What? What's wrong?
Listen, if you're so tired, why don't you go to your own room?
You know, David, I was just trying to be sweet. I mean, you said things would work out. What do you want from me?
Well, he wants
you
to leave.
For you to go away.
So...
read a room.
I also can't stand anyone referring to, like, using sweet in that way, like, after Big Love, like, the whole thing of that Mormon wives are supposed to stay sweet. It's just, that term is ruined for me forever. Even before they put it in Donna's mouth, underneath her incredibly raggedy split ends, which you can see in the visual aids. Later, David has no patience for Steve's sympathy about his breakup and takes off across the student union as soon as he sees Howard demanding, surprise, more meth and pulling his cash out in the middle of the floor. Howard's tapped and David loses it, but Howard says he will take them to hang out with some friends of his in the hopes of mooching something off of them. Howard is bad at drugs. Meanwhile, Donna is fucking torturing Kelly, telling her over and over again that if David is trying to get in touch with her, she's not interested, when we know the only way David is going to want to have anything to do with Donna is if she's made out of speed. In fact, the opposite is true, and that she is made out of slow. Anyway, when the phone rings and it's Dylan, she runs outside to cry like a simp in clip 18.
Come on, Donna.
Super fake crying. Moving on. The next day, Donna is walking Andrea in her enormous turtleneck back to her room and has to act like it doesn't smash her heart to be witness to a schmoop scene when Jesse is there waiting to surprise Andrea. Sarah made a big... cut a picture of this for the visual aids when she put in the file name Mount Rushmore of Who Cares or Who Gives a Shit. I forget which it is. Either way, so true.
And I mean, there's only three people in the shot, so I guess technically it's not Mount Rushmore, but I guess I'm the fourth face of like Roosevelt just staring into the middle distance like, kill me.
I can't quite recall if the seal poster is visible in the shot, but let's say the seal is the fourth person of
Who Cares. Wait, actually, little Carteris can be the fourth one.
Oh, yeah, true.
I mean, not so little in... these episodes.
Yeah, the Carteris triplets, perhaps. Anyway, that night, the pathetic fucking drip Donna sits up listening to David's stupid show in clip 19.
Kel, what should I do? I mean, I don't even think sex Kill is yourself. The issue anymore. What's left for me? Dye my hair?
Donna.
Get a boob job? What? I'm being serious. You were so mean to me yesterday, Kel. Just tell me what I'm doing wrong.
Well, for one thing, Yesterday. You're listing things that you've already done. Dye your hair and get a boob job. Check and check. Nose job. You forgot that one. Anyway, get a life is what you should mainly do. And when he comes back on the air in a tizzy, as we heard up top, Donna is empathetic in clip 20.
Oh, yeah. There are some new testing times that you should know about. Damn it. Hold on.
Listen to him. He's falling apart. Maybe I should just move out now before I completely ruin him.
Donna, I don't think that you're David's problem. I've been watching him all week, and I think that something's got him. And it's not too much coffee.
Like what?
Like drugs.
David? No way.
No, when my mom went into relapse, she acted just like this. She had huge mood swings, acting all secretive all the time.
Oh, great. What are you saying? I've driven him to drugs now?
No, I didn't mean it like that. Look, I'm probably wrong, okay? It's just that he's been acting so strange.
Well, couldn't it be that he's hurting just as much as I am?
You're right. That's probably it.
yeah, that's probably it. Kelly clearly sure. believes that this is the case. Whatever, Donna. You're so pathetic. Yeah. Anyway, of course we know it's not that, as we cut back to David at the station, leaving Howard a desperate drug-seeking message, which Howard interrupts by actually walking in clip 21.
21!
Jeez, I said I was coming.
Yeah, before the show, man. I've been dying out here. Where's the stuff?
Listen, Silver, I am not a dealer. Don't treat me like one.
Okay, fine. I'm sorry. Just please tell me you have it.
Will you get a grip? Crank's not an everyday drug. It will fry your brain.
Now you tell me.
Well, I thought you could handle it.
I can. Look, I just have to get through the week, okay, so I can get on with my life. You want a hit? I have some extra juice.
I got some extra juice.
I just wish they would stop writing him even saying that he's sorry, because he just gives it such a twatty tone every time that it's like, yeah. You're not sorry for anything.
No, you're not going to be sorry. You haven't been, even before he was on drugs, he wasn't sorry. Like, he's just an asshole.
Yeah, this isn't actually changing his behavior that markedly. He's just Mm-mm. sleeping more. Yep. Whatever.
Well, that's pretty much it. So let's wrap it up with our most valuable player. Months, very loyal to Steve, enjoys a moon pie.
Suzanne, good con.
It's true, she is. She's trained her daughter in ways that her daughter probably has not even realized she does, so that's pretty good.
Exactly.
Least valuable player. Donna, I fucking hate her being all pathetic. This episode and the next one, it's like the worst. And actually, the next several, come to think of it.
God, it's infuriating. She's just such an Eeyore and mm-hmm. is not getting the hint. Like, please get angry with him. Yes. That said, him. David.
Fair enough.
Worst.
Yeah, he is terrible. Also terrible, Brandon. So let's do the Moo Moo Parker Challenge. 5 ways from this episode Brandon could have ended up dead. Corey Randall could have pushed him down the stairs outside the exam when Brandon confronted him for the 15th time about his crookedness.
Got a paper cut on his eye looking at Deshaun's test results. That got infected and then he died.
Deshaun pushing a TV over him and crushing him when he was shitty about Deshaun actually trying in school for once.
He goes to visit Deshaun and Tatasha in Texas, and they have a fun game called Put Brandon in a Tire and Roll Him Across the Border. And he's shot and killed.
Smothered by Deshaun's one and only pillow after his injury.
I don't know if that's going to get it done, but
might not.
I'm into the idea.
And that makes 5.
Why should I take a back seat? Because I'm a girl?
You shouldn't. It's time for our excerpt from the I Hate Brenda book, Shannen Doherty Exposed. We are still in the chapter on Shannen Doherty's political contributions to the world, and there's going to be a lot from this one. I'm basically going to end up reading this entire chapter, so let's start with the first chunk of that. The Two Faces of Shannen. I can't believe the authors of this book missed a chance to make a mean pun about her eyes, but they did. The occasions that Shannen has been known to, quote, turn the other cheek, unquote, have been limited exclusively to photo opportunities. As a result, her public profile is shaded with hypocrisy and double standards. For instance, image. Shannen has made appearances at fundraisers organized to raise money for Mothers Against Drunk Driving. AKA MAD. Reality. Shannen has gained a notorious reputation for stumbling into her automobile following a drinking binge. Instead of Kate Hepburn, her role model has been Liz Taylor in Virginia Woolf. Image. <Wow. laughs> This is a quote. I don't like playing airheads. If I'm going to play a teenager, I'm going to play someone with brains and intelligence. A thinking young person. Reality. Winner of Sassy Magazine's entertainment poll for least believable teenager. I don't understand how those are necessarily in conflict, but okay. Image. Growing up in the male-dominated South, though, had its drawbacks. Quote, I saw how women were treated, and I wasn't going to be treated like that. Reality. 90210 was the winner of Sassy Magazine's entertainment poll for a TV show that depicts women in a demeaning way. Hard to argue with that one. And that is the end of our excerpt for now.
Next time on Again With This, David is on drugs some more. How can I tell? Because of all the slow-mo and all the close-ups and the backwards faux kangle of rapid onset addiction. Also, he loses his sister. You'll be losing your lunch when you check out our visual aids for this episode and all the episodes of Again With This. They're at our website at previously.tv. You can also follow us on Twitter at PreviouslyTV. My spiffy co-host, Tara Ariano, is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm at Tomato Nation on Twitter. And our 100% gluten-free host, David T. Cole, is on Instagram at Glark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.